usually when I get towards the end of the book that I'm reading, I have some sense of something that I'm going to talk about for the podcast. But for this book, Lost and Found by Catherine Schultz, I didn't. And it was a really good book. It was really beautifully written. Catherine Schultz just like, she seems to really just have her shit together. She comes from a wonderful, loving family. She's in this wonderful relationship. It's just like this life that I, so in some ways, cannot relate to. So what I want to examine today is going to be pretty quick. It's going to be not what she has written, but the way that she has written it, because there was just so much of it that just struck me as beautifully written. And so then what I did was I just tried to dissect it. So this is going to be like a little bit more of a nerdier breakdown than some of my other ones. So I will give a brief explanation of the story. In the first part, she talks about the death of her father, and she talks about grief and loss in such a beautiful way. And her father just seemed like this a most amazing man. Now, in the second part, she talks about finding the love of her life. One of the cool things about finding her partner was that she found her a year before her father died. And so she was in this new relationship, going through this grief and having this person by her side through it. What she is getting at throughout the book is that there is always this tension in our world at all times, this, you know, happiness and sadness and this grief and love. And let me get into the things that I want to talk about first. And it kind of goes into this the theme of her book, which is this tension in our world. She, Catherine, creates so much tension in her writing. This is my biggest takeaway and something that I want to carry with me. So to jump right in here, on page 73, she writes, "To be bereft is to live with the constant presence of absence." So this, I think, is like a paradox. Almost feels like it doesn't make sense, but it does, because it's these two opposite things. It has this repetition with it. So the second part of the word is the same, sense. And we're talking about presence versus absence, which are two opposite things. So this sentence just like really is a beautiful sentence. To be bereft is to live with the constant presence of absence. Okay, and so then here's another one. She is talking about the process of finding things. And on page 94, she writes, "Calculating the best way to do so might not matter very much when you are looking for your daughter's backpack, but it matters very much indeed when you are looking for your daughter." So again, she is repeating a word. In the first example, she's repeating the second half of the word. But here she's saying your daughter twice. But when you add the daughter's backpack or remove the backpack, it has this completely different meaning. Here's another one. On page 210, she writes, "Committing ourselves to finding the job in time for the wedding we were simultaneously scrambling to plan was, we realized in a moment of sanity, insane." So this one made me laugh, and she does it again. She's got sanity and insane. They are they're the opposite of each other, and they sound similar. They've got sane both in both of them, sanity and insane. And she also placed them next to each other in the sentence. Was, we realized in a moment of sanity, insane. Okay, here's another one. When a storm hit on her wedding night, she's talking about how her and some of the wedding guests stayed outside under this big tent for a bit. So on page 214, she writes, "The rest of us stayed for a while, half protected and doubtless half endangered by the tent." So half is being repeated here, and then protected and endangered are opposites. And look, when I was reading the book, I did not pick up on this stuff. But these sentences I highlighted because they just hit me in a way that I was like, oh my God, that was so cool. That was so cool. And then when I broke it down and said, like, what did she do? This same thing kept coming up over and over again of this tension, of these opposites, but also this repetition at the same time. So how can I create tension in my writing? How can I use repetition and opposites together? So these are the questions that I'm taking with me into my writing. And I think a lot of this stuff happens in the editing phase, all of this way to make your writing beautiful. I don't think that I'm ever going to write this beautifully in a first draft. I think it's going to take a lot of work to take something that you've already written and and look for these moments where you can plug these in. Okay, so this next one is sort of in the same vein of creating tension, but it's a little bit different than what the examples I gave before. So in this part, she's talking about this chair that her father used to always sit in at her sister's house. And on page 72, she writes, "He would settle into it shortly after arriving and occupy it more or less continuously until the time came to leave, give or take meals and the occasional stroll down the hall to his granddaughter's bedroom for bedtime stories and animated discussions about current affairs in the land of dolls and stuffed animals." Current affairs in the land of dolls and stuffed animals. So you've got current affairs, which is very, you know, adult and like news-like. And then you've got the land of dolls and stuffed animals, which is something childlike. So again, this is that this opposite of something like very business sounding with something very childlike and fantasy sounding. So that opposite verbiage. Okay, this next thing is just something really fun. And this one I think is a little bit easier to do than the other ones, which is pairing something literal and figurative together. So on page 215, she writes, "I am sitting in C's lap as our officiant, in pajamas and high spirits, signs us with a grand 11th hour flourish into marriage." Okay, so she's talking about her officiant here, and it's they accidentally forgot to sign the marriage license right after they got married, so it's very late in the evening, and they woke her up and asked her to sign them, be there to sign them. And so she's in pajamas, literally, and she's in high spirits, figuratively. Pajamas and high spirits. Here's another one. On page 219, she writes, "I remember looking around at all of them toward the end of the evening, full of gratitude and chocolate cake." So full of gratitude and chocolate cake. Literally full of chocolate cake, figuratively full of gratitude. It's just a really simple, easy thing to do. My friend Rick Lewis, after I took these notes, I noticed it in somebody else's writing. So Rick Lewis recently wrote his newsletter and he did the same thing. He said he checked his luggage and his neuroses at the gate and when he was getting onto an airplane. So he literally checked his luggage and figuratively checked his neuroses, which was really funny. He actually had another thing in the same piece about something about having a short supply of clothes and patience. So I think that this one is a lot easier to look for to try to find opportunities because it just is a little playful way to make your writing fun. And no, these are little things. This is how we elevate our writing and take it to the next level. Okay, I've got one example of show, don't tell. I just wanted to share this with you. It's really good. Page 65, she writes, "By contrast, the things that undid me were almost always unexpected and generally oblique. As on the day a little over a year after my father died when, in an instant, the words on my laptop blurred over in front of me and a bite of bagel turned to chalk in my mouth because, sitting in a cafe in Manhattan, I overheard a man say to his lunch companion, 'I wish my daughter would call me more often.'" So, she said, the words on my laptop blurred over in front of me and a bite of bagel turned to chalk in my mouth. She did not say, "In an instant, I immediately started crying," which is we know that's what's happening. But instead, she shows us, okay? And I have certainly been at my computer and started crying and I know exactly what happens. The words on the screen get blurry because you're crying and there's all these tears in your eyes and you can't see straight. And then the bagel turning to chalk in your mouth, you know, anytime I've ever been eating something and then started crying, you know what it feels like. It's just like suddenly you don't want to be eating whatever you're eating anymore. It doesn't really taste appetizing to you. And so I love this, showing us what she saw in front of her when she started crying and what happened inside her mouth. This is just a great example to show us that you're crying rather than tell us that you're crying. Okay, so that's it. I know this was a quick one, but since it was so quick, I did want to give you guys an update on the memoir, my memoir. I decided, you know, a few months ago that I am not formally working on the memoir. I'm just focused on reading the memoirs, learning about them, doing this podcast, and then each week with my newsletter, writing stories from my past or my present that could eventually be put into a memoir. But at the beginning of this year, Michael Dean, who some of you know through Rite of Passage, he sent out his newsletter and he had this offering to work with people one-on-one on kind of whatever they wanted to, any kind of like big projects, big essays. I have worked with Michael in the past on a bunch of my bigger pieces, and he's an amazing writer. He's an amazing editor, and I've known him for a long time, and he has a way of bringing something to my writing that is not stuff that I think about, but I know that I need it. So anyway, he makes my writing better. And I was like, oh, well, I would love to work with Michael. I don't really want to work on the book right now, but I do have one essay in mind, this essay that I've been working on about subtle sexism. So I could, at least we could start there and then just see. And so then I reach out to him and we're talking about it. And then I just start thinking more and more, and I'm like, well, actually, I feel like I am excited to work on the memoir, and I am getting closer, and I would like some help kind of figuring this stuff out and like making some actual moves toward it. So I am working with Michael Dean this year. We're meeting every other week, and I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. Like right now, he's been helping me with that subtle sexism essay. And then this week, I am going to write up just for myself who the book is for. And we've been talking about some pivotal moments in my life, what those pivotal moments are, how they could play into a timeline or a structure for the book, and then start to go towards those pivotal moments and write more in depth about those, and continue to use the newsletter to publish these stories. So before, I told you guys how I am writing this, I want to write a book about moving away from my authentic self and then towards my authentic self, which is where I'm moving towards now and always. And that felt too big. And Michael has already helped me figure out that like one way into this story that could be more specific is using my pseudonym, Charlie. So yeah, it's like this first part of the book would be me moving away from myself. And then the second part is like me moving towards myself and literally becoming a different person, a different identity with Charlie Bleeker. And so I still don't know the exact timeline of the book or how it's going to be structured or how it's going to end, but it's getting more specific and more focused, and I'm really excited about this angle of using my pseudonym. So that's the update. Right now I am reading a book that is like the complete 180 from this beautiful book about that Catherine Schultz wrote. This book that I'm reading now is called My Fair Junkie by Amy Dresner. It's about this woman who became a total junkie and like just completely was a total fucked up mess for a really long time. And she writes it in a very crude way. And it's just like so different from the book that I just read. But it's fun. It's fun to read. And it's really hard to read too, about when she was using drugs. So that is on the docket next. And I'm running out of memoirs in my little stack here. So I would love some recommendations from you guys. I do have one on deck called Life on Delay, Making Peace with a Stutter, that came recommended from someone. So I think that would probably be next, but please send me your recs. I'd love to hear from you guys. I'd love to hear what is resonating with you. And I'll be back in 2 weeks.